as crusaders then, when they recorded this, and of course now they're just known as the Crusaders, when they performed this tune live at the Newport and Pacific Jazz Festival in 1966. How time flies. This is called Trance Dance. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead. And today, I want to know whether you have answers. Let's see if you have any answers. I have lots of questions, but do you have the answers? That's the main thing. A lot of very important things are happening, and, you know, it will continue for a couple of hours more. One is the testimony of Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is the point person in the Trump administration for infectious diseases. And he's testifying before a committee examining what is really the status of the health of the people in the United States at this time, especially as it relates to the coronavirus. We have President Trump and President Trump's lawyers, more accurately, appearing before the U.S. Supreme Court, making arguments that the president is entitled to keep his financial records secret. Well, we'll see about that. So far, he has successfully resisted any and all attempts to get a look at his financial records, as most every president has done, without putting up such a fight. But there's a reason, of course. There always is a reason with Donald Trump for why he does things. And one suspects that the truth of his financial portrait, if you will, is very different from what he portrays. And we get a sense that things are closing in on him, or he's reacting as if things are closing in on him. People are being more openly critical of how he's running things, but there's no evidence that it's having any effect on him taking a different tact in how he's doing things. Polls are consistently showing now great dissatisfaction by the people with his performance so far as President of the United States. And we're now seeing even the Democratic Party itself having some problems with where he has taken the party through some of his actions, and things are building. So you can see that it's getting to him. He's not that stoic figure anymore. He's really bristling. He's very emotional. He's tightly wound and still making monumental mistakes. But, you know, we will have to wait and see how it all turns out. But in the meantime, here's what is going on today in terms of the program. We're going to ask you to call in at 888-874-4888. Just blindly call on the premise that whatever the question is, you have an answer. Whether it's a perfect answer, we don't care. But it should be a pretty good answer. So you call in not knowing what the question is that you will be asked. And just the same, you'll be expected to answer it like a pro. A very unusual way to do an interview, wouldn't you say? But it's fun this way because it puts you to the test what you have been acquiring, the information you've been acquiring and storing in your memory bank, how it helps you frame your relationship with the world, or what you know of the world. And in any event, it keeps you, it keeps you on point. You're supposed to be able at any time, at the drop of a hat, to be able to defend yourself in terms of the knowledge that you have on any question that is asked of you. But I'll give you one hint, but that's all. The questions are about contemporary issues in politics that we have been covering, some we have not covered at all, but we are going to test your acumen, your general information acumen on this one. 888-874-4888. Let's see which brave souls are going to start us off today. So far, everybody is very timid. That's not like you. You're brave people. Put yourself to the test. See what you know. You can't possibly fail this thing. You just can't possibly not know anything about the topics that I have lined up for you here. But we'll see how you do at 888-874-4888. The first person who calls is the first person who gets on air. And the first person who gets a question to answer. Are you game? Are you confident in yourself? Do you have faith that no matter what the question is, you can answer it? All right. Now, where is Siga from? You're on the air. Hello?
Yes. Hello. Yes.
Are you from the Bronx or Brooklyn? Hello, we're having some difficulty hearing you. Well, we lost you. Something with the fluidity of the signal. Ed from Queens, you're on the air. Are you ready?
Hello, how you doing, Trish?
Okay, how are you?
I'm all right. And Ed here with the broom.
How is that going, by the way?
Still sleeping. I mean, I was surprised. That part of 93rd Avenue has turned out to be clean without any of my efforts, because I had to go away to help a family member in another part of the city, and I came back, and I'm surprised it's staying clean. Other people got involved, so kudos to you, and hopefully it'll grow when we can get
I
back
think
together.
so. I th you have all the makings of a very good and powerful and influential leader. So I hope it keeps that way, reflecting your input.
I wouldn't say that,
okay.
But it's a good start. It's definitely a good start.
It's a very good start.
So far away.
All
far
right.
away.
So here's my first question. In the battle for the presidency, what are the strengths and deficits of the main candidates who have emerged so far?
Okay, that's a good one. the deficit parts are relatively easy. I mean, you've got a narcissistic maniac who's in office, and I believe an Alzheimer's candidate who's running for office in this single-party/dual-party system. I mean,
well, I don't know who you're talking about, so you'll have to name names.
Okay, well, the incumbent. The orange man, we all know his shortcomings. He's a chronic liar. He's a he's got some type of mental defect, as far as you have said, and I tend to agree. He's got some severe mental issues. The only thing that I can say to his credit is that he sticks to his guns. I mean, he hasn't changed. he's been incompetent from the very beginning. So if consistency is anything, he hasn't changed. As far as the Democratic candidate, Mr. Biden, like I said, I believe he suffers from Alzheimer's. He also is a chronic liar. His whole history has been plagiarism and the claiming of events and alliances with people that he never met or historically can't be proven. He actually plagiarized a whole speech from a British politician early in his career, and he's known for that. The sexual allegations that are presented in front of him, which I personally believe they probably have some grain of truth to them. The only good thing that I can say about him offhand is that he was associated with Obama, and you can take that for what it's worth. But we're really in a state of the lesser of two evil, or the evil of two lessers, whichever way you want to look at it. I mean, that's pretty much where I'm at with this presidential campaign as it stands in this.
Dare I ask you what you consider as a strength in both the candidates?
That is a good question. I mean, the ability to believe their own lies, I guess. I mean, their steadfastness in their behavior. Like I said, if consistency is for anything, they are consistent with their attitudes and their behaviors. Although they are negative, I mean, the consistency says something. That's about the only attribute I can put to both of them.
You give Trump no credit at all for still having a sizable base.
Well, I mean, he's got a sizable base, but that just goes to the ignorance of the American people. I mean,
but just the same. I mean, you have to let us know that you have observed this. Just the same.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a solid base, 40%, 35% of the population who relish in their ignorance and choose to ignore the fact. I mean, if you want to count that as an attribute, that you can get an ignorant person to follow you to the end of the earth or off a cliff, you know, lemmings follow each other and kill themselves periodically also, even though they do that as far as the attribute to control their population. But yeah, if you follow a stupid person, yeah, he's got mass appeal with massively large idiots, as far as I'm concerned.
What's Biden's strength in your view?
Like I said, the consistency he puts with his lies. I mean, he will lie and swear to it. I mean, if you want to look at that as a positive aspect, as far as an African American, I can't see any other thing than that. I mean, he hasn't done anything positive for African American community. He hasn't done anything positive for the working community. I mean, I'm hard pressed to find any real plus side to him. You know, it's difficult to look for. I mean, other than his association with Obama, if you want to take that, you know, but his track record is far too abysmal to even, when you really start to look at it, his bankruptcy policies, the crime bill. I mean, it's just, I'd be lying to myself if I could say I could find anything redeeming about his policies.
Really?
Or his personality.
That is a stunning admission. Well, thank you. Thank you. You did well. But I wanted you to fight a little harder to find something on the positive side that the candidates will utilize for sure, especially now that they're more aware of how they are running with the voting public, that they would try to figure out how to capitalize on perhaps just one or two things that are in their favor. But thanks for calling in and getting us started today. Mike from Florida, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese, thank you for taking my call, first-time caller.
Oh, I'm glad that you called. Welcome.
I think that the
I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay,
are you ready?
Ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Trump, in many ways, is indicating that he's not depending on or doesn't even need the so-called minority vote to win. Why is it exactly the opposite for Biden?
Okay. I volunteer to be ambushed, so I understand. Let me give it my best shot.
Take your best shot. That's what we ask.
I think you, Therese, you know, the Democratic Party has had a captive black constituency for umpteen years. They have these leaders or so-called leaders who can be called upon to muster the troops no matter how bad the Democratic Party has treated black people. I mean, Clyburn gave us Joe Biden with, his blessing and whatever else happened to, you know, bring Joe Biden from the grave to be the front runner.
We have give the guy a little bit of credit.
we
have the man in the grave.
but you know, the captive audience that the Democratic Party has had for black people, it seems to me that black people have taken, the Democratic Party has taken black people for granted. The attitude probably from the top, though, well, they have nowhere else to go. We're the best that that they have since sliced bread. I remember when Al Sharpton spoke at Hillary Clinton's, nomination or convention, whatever she was being served up. And you remember that speech? He said that he was going to ride that donkey all the way to wherever, you know, when he made that speech on behalf of the Democratic Party and why we should support the Democratic candidate. So, you know, black people, it seems to me, are so entwined with the Democratic Party. Very few want to try something else as independents or maybe try the other party or even the Green Party. I mean, they're just so comfortable with getting, you know, the little bit here and the little bit there, you know, the attitude of the, well, we're not going to get a lot, but at least we got something. And when your standards are so low, you, Therese, and you just accept that as your norm, you know, one slice of bread is better than no slice of bread. It seems to me that the captivity of the black community by the Democratic Party, that's what they rely on to, you know, move with their agenda. And black people just seem to accept that.
Well done. Thank you so much. You did a good job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, don't walk around the house all swell-headed for the rest of the day. keep modesty in mind. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you, Therese. I'm ready for the question.
All righty. No matter who wins a 2020 presidential election, the United States will undergo profound, some say even irreversible changes. What do you think some of those changes might be?
Well, the United States has been getting to the point where its founders wanted to be. Total control of the ruling class here and suppression all the way for the people to down to the level of Bangladesh, American style. The point is, when we think about the presidency, which has been brought up this afternoon, we're thinking about an office that is not designed to serve the interests of the people who live here. It never has been that. It is an office that is the chief executive office for the benefit of the small oligarch or ruling class. So it's been better, getting better and better at that goal, and it's going to continue to go into the stratosphere and nearly into space. The average people, the people that inhabit the place, they're going to get poorer and poorer, and those at the top are going to get richer and richer. That is the goal, and we need to keep that in mind. As I've said before, and I think I have to be redundant, the people have nothing in the Democrat or Republican group of that one party that is designed to actually completely benefit the people. This is a party that's owned, one party, Republican, Democrat, that's owned lock, stock, and barrel by the ruling class, and the president is the chief operating person for that party, for the benefit of that party, and for the benefit of the ruling elite. That's why he's there, whether it's Franklin D. Roosevelt or all the rest of them, none of them are there to benefit us. They're there to benefit the people at the top, the corporations and the richest people, the plutocrats and the oligarchs, and that's the way it is. And people have to understand they're in a game. And this is a wonderful game for those who rule, because people are fooled into thinking that they're making these decisions. The people who run in this one party are picked by those at the top, and they give the people this notion that they're doing something in these primaries and these elections and this voting, when they control who is at the ballot box on the list of those you can vote for, and they do everything they can to make certain that there's no viable party at all for the people to vote in their for in their interests. You're limited to these two groups in the one party, and with the black community, you have nowhere to go. And people need to also remember at one time, the black folks who could voted for the Republican Party until Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He's deified, but he was working in the interests of those who ruled to prevent any kind of rebellion. That's why we had the New Deal, not because he loved the folks so much, because that was something that was needed by those who rule at that time to maintain their power. And slowly but surely, they've taken some of those things back, and they've been very successful for it. So people are thinking about who's the good president, with Republicans, Democrats. I don't see it that way. And I believe that people need to do something different than going out and reflexively pulling a lever for some candidate that doesn't have their interests at heart.
Well, my goodness. How come one after the other today be getting wizards at these questions? You're doing so well. I'm grinning with pride that I'm in your midst. Thank you. Well, let's see who's next. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, by the way. And we get you your questions as soon as we can. Ali from New York, you're on the air. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm hanging in.
Well, that's what all of us are doing, hanging and being like a pond just waiting for the moment.
That's where we all are, it seems. Yeah. All right, so are you ready for your question?
Yes, I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer it, but I'm ready. That's what I called.
I will be surprised if you can't answer any questions. I would be surprised. Okay, here's your question. From your own knowledge and observation, what are the key issues around which marginalized communities must organize now?
Oh, my goodness. The first one is...
That's not that tough. This is right in your neighborhood. This is right where you live.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Involved in this every day.
The first one is definitely housing. This is something that is really killing humanity. And it's not only in the United States. This is a worldwide problem. But here in New York City, you know what is going on with this gentrification, which I think after this coronavirus, I think they will get better, because I don't think a lot of people are going to remain in this city because they're going to be too afraid, especially the people that they have come here for money. But that's one of the issues that I think we should organize. Housing, definitely education, because you know how the school system is so segregated, but it's not only segregated by ethnicity. It's the money that we are not getting money into our school system. And now Cuomo just made a deal with Gates where he wants to, and you know Cuomo, he loves charter school, and that is going to be a big problem because it's elimination of union and elimination of this job. And as you know, what is happening right now, every small business is closed. So I think even a small businesses to get involved with organizations, because I think a lot of people are going to be out of work. And as you know, people right now, they don't have money. And they don't have money not only for food, but they don't have money for housing. And I wanted to know after the 3 months what is going to happen in this city with the housing. How? Because even though they're telling you that you don't have to pay for 3 months, I wanted to know what is going to happen. Are the people going to have to back up that rent and pay for those 3 months? Or are they just going to have to pay a portion of the money that they owe? And what is going to happen? But I think we have to organize together. And I'm talking about Black, white, yellow, all of us. I need to fight for housing, decent job. And when I talk about decent job, I'm not talking about blue collar, white collar. I'm talking about living wages, no $15 an hour. We have to organize for people to get a living wage. It's not about $15 an hour. That won't cover. Also, it's the health system. A lot of people, even in this city, they don't have insurance. They don't have health insurance. That's why the people are even afraid to go to hospital. Not only because some of us, we don't come out after they decided that we do have the coronavirus, even if we don't have it, but it's because also people, they don't have money. So there is tons of issues that we should organize. But I will say housing, education, health care, a living wage. Definitely living wage. If all of us, especially people of color, would have a living wage, we will be able to afford a lot of things that we can't right now at this moment.
See, So what were you scared of about this question? You had all this anxiety, and you nailed everything. You nailed the question, and you nailed the answers to it. Thank you so much for calling in and contributing today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, we move to Henry from Chicago. How are you doing, Henry?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I'm just hoping you give me an easy question like, what is 2 plus 2?
All the questions are easy. This is just a start to get you acclimated to when it's a question session. You can go, oh, I could answer. I could deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad you called it. So here's your question, Henry.
Okay.
Is sitting out the presidential election unacceptable or out of the question this year? Why?
Okay. It is unacceptable only on one condition. If you sit out, you know, not voting this presidential election, and you have no plan of participating politically, I would think that's unacceptable. I can understand why people don't vote, but at the same time, you know, people have this misconception that voting is, you know, that, you know, that's the only thing that garners political power. No, voting is just the start of the political process. Now, what I am suggesting is that if we do plan on sitting out, that some of us go in the back room somewhere and say, this is what we're going to do the next election. We're either going to come up with some sort of contingency of what we want from whatever candidates that are, you know, that are going to be coming up, either groom our own candidate, you know, to run in the next election, or maybe even form our own political party. But that's the whole thing. Just kind of sitting out and being aloof, you know, just, you know, I think that might not be the right thing. But obviously, we're going to have to go somewhere and plan out what we're going to do the next time, because obviously everything is too late. I mean, you know, the election is coming up in the next couple of months. But, you know, one of the things that we've always talked about was doing something in preparation for at least the next election, which, you know, hopefully this country will still be around by the time the next election comes.
We all keep our fingers crossed on that one.
Yes.
But we do have to not get overwhelmed by the enormity of the problems that confront us, but we should also have the strength, even though it looks impossible sometimes, you have to have the strength that would persuade you to continue. You do have to have that. So let me ask you a follow-up question then.
Mm-hmm.
If people choose to sit out this election, what do you do with such people?
Well, I guess if I'm looking at it from an individual standpoint, I mean, people have their own, you know, people are free to choose whether they want to participate in or not. But I'm kind of just looking at it as a group, you know, as an overall group, especially in particularly Black people. If we are to just sit out and hold our vote, then let's not just sit out and hold the vote and just don't do anything. We need to organize and get something done for the next time this comes around. So we can demand from whatever candidate is running or from our candidate, you know, if we groom one, to say, this is what we want. So obviously if somebody comes to me and says, well, I'm not going to vote because I don't think it matters, then, hey, you know what, that's your choice. But other than that, you know, I think as an overall group, we should probably sit out and we should probably organize something.
You don't know yet what that something is, but you have an idea that that's a direction we ought to be considering?
Oh, yes. I mean, we need to do something different. We can't be doing the same thing over and over again. You know, this picking of the lesser of the two evils has not worked for us, and it has never worked for us. So we need to do something different.
Okay. Well, you did well. You did very well.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
No need to be, you know, so you had a little bit of trepidation there, but you did very, very well. That's great. Thanks for calling in and contributing. All right, who is next? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We are asking questions and looking for your answers to such questions. There's no wrong or no right. There's just the idea of inculcating the habit of asking the questions and moving toward answers, whatever those answers might be. I still have quite a few questions around here, and I did send a note to our engineer today saying, I'm not even taking a break. I don't want to sacrifice even 1 minute to music today. We're going to go straight through so you have all the time in the program. And you can use it, and it's going very well. I'm very proud of you. You're doing really well. So 888-874-4888. I'm just asking a question. It's not about putting you on the spot. It is about asking where your thoughts are at this historical moment. What are you thinking about? What has brought you to such a thought or thoughts? And what do you do with all of this information that you have filed in your head? What happens to it once you stored it in your head? Does it just go away or what? What happens to it? It'd be good to know. All right, Jesse from New Orleans, Louisiana. You're on the air.
Hey, Miss Altrice. Love you, sir.
Hello. It's you, Treese.
Okay.
Are you ready for your question?
I'm going to try.
I think you will do very well. So here's your question. Will practicality or principle inform your vote this year? For many, a vote for Trump is out of the question. But will Biden, even with major flaws, look more attractive after trusted messengers start touting the Democratic Party line? Which is it for you?
Right now, principle is out the window in this country. Like, civil servants should be civil and serve, but that ain't happening. Both sides, the left and the right, they're basically one and the same. One thing I'd like to say is this. Our biggest problem is monopolization. And I think it was Teddy Roosevelt that started the antitrust movement, which really stopped monopolizations. And that's really our problem. The monopolies own this country.
All right, but you're kind of straying from the central question. Let me repeat it so that you remain on point.
Okay.
Will practicality or principle inform your vote this year?
It's actually going to be both, to be honest with you.
Okay, explain.
Okay, well, that's a big one. So the practicality of it is what our needs need to be met. The principle is that we should have morals, ethics, standards that we should live up to, that this country was supposedly built on. And so if I had to make a choice, I really couldn't, because it has to be a combination of the two.
So where exactly will you be landing if you decided that you will vote?
See, that's what the big thing.
Your guy?
People, I mean, people that don't vote are actually voting in a way. The abolitionist movement was what helped free the slaves, and they withdrew their vote, and it became a power. And that was a big deal, because without the abolitionists, the slaves would not have been freed. So, I mean, I'm trying to keep it simple, but, I mean, our issues in this country are really not that complex, you know. It's just about the community that we talked about earlier, getting together, forming a union, you know, and just concentrating on taking care of our own local communities, because the government is murdering people. I hope I've answered some of your questions. I tried.
You're still doing very well. You're doing very well. You just need to sort out, you know, the order that you have things in so that you stay as close as possible to the point.
Okay, well, I would definitely choose principle first, and then I'd go with practicality second.
Principles first, and
yes,
practicality second.
Yes.
With that in mind, what does that give you a hint of where you will be going with your vote?
That's the thing. I'm probably going to withdraw from voting, to be honest with you, and it's not based on the concept of choosing the lesser of two evils is just an insult to intelligence to me. You know, I don't get that. But I would definitely choose Biden over Trump if I had to make a choice. But that is not my choice to make right now, because I don't endorse either one of those parties. We should have. Let me tell you what I would like to do is have an American party where everybody's included, and it's a one party, and everybody's voice stands for something. That's what I would do.
Okay. But for the meantime, since the election is 6 months away, you're looking toward relying on principle first and practicality
yes.
later, or practicality first or principle later.
Well, it's really practical to have principles, you know. So, I mean, they're really intertwined to each other.
Yeah, but you're not answering the question. You have to pick one. Either you're going toward being a practical person, in which case you're prepared to overlook a lot of sins. You're prepared to overlook a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
If you prepare to go with principle, then you draw a very strict line that you will not consider giving your vote to any party or person if they don't come into alignment with principle. So
yeah,
that's
so I would choose. I would definitely choose
hard
principle.
Place.
I would definitely choose principle over practicality.
Okay.
But there's some things that are just unacceptable.
I feel for you, because I can't figure out who is practical and who's principled in the running this year with the candidates that we have. How do you classify a Biden? Is it, you think he's more principled than practical, or is it more practical than principled? We don't know. This is a very
right.
sad situation to be in. But you wrestled with the question. I have great admiration for that. And you made some strong points as well. Thanks so much for calling in. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. We have Michelle from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Okay, Michelle. How are you?
I'm well.
Good. You ready for your question?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I like that. Is trying to resuscitate the Sanders movement if only to consolidate what's left of its base and look at turf it might still capture locally, statewide, and even nationally, a futile effort, a lost cause.
No, I don't think it's a futile effort, and I definitely don't think it's a lost cause, because if you look at the folks that were supporting Bernie, you know, it was a grassroots movement based on everything that's been reported, right? So he wasn't getting millions of dollars from high-end individuals or companies. He was getting, you know, 25 bucks here, 50 bucks here, a couple hundred bucks there. That's working people, right? So that's people who are passionate and probably did without something to make that donation to Bernie's run for president. So I think that fire is still there. I don't think that went anywhere. Why would it, right? They were voting for a change that they thought he represented and that they believed in. And I believe they thought they were voting for a fighter, someone who would stand up to Trump and the things he's put in place and to the best of his ability represent them. So,
but he has he's quit the race, and we don't know whether anything comes up afterwards to replace it. We don't know even what the feeling is by Sanders as to what the next move should be now that he has quit the race. People are leaderless. It's not a good place to be in.
Not at all. And it's very unfortunate he did that, because I think that cans his ability to ever run for any major political office like that again. He's lost the faith of the masses who were supporting him. So that's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I would say that. But
I do think this is a prime opportunity, on the other hand, for someone else to step up, for someone else to galvanize and inspire those individuals to pick up the torch and finish the race. You know, it's like a relay race, right? You got different anchors on each leg. He might have been the fourth anchor, and now he's, you know, we maybe have someone who can pick up the third anchor and run it to the finish line if they just would decide to pick up that mantle. I think they'd be surprised at the support they would get.
But is that wishful thinking, or is that what you see as possible?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, right? Eternal optimist, I'm hopeful.
Well, and, that's good.
I mean, we're in such dire straits right now in this country and around the world. Hope is what we're all looking for, hope, to believe in hope again, and someone who can represent that belief for the little guys at the bottom.
Well, in order to arrive at that position where people are galvanizing, as you say, where people would have come together, how long do you think it would take before it materializes as a real movement?
I think we're ripe for revolution in this country. And I think to pigeonhole it with a sense of time would do it an injustice. There is a fire burning in the belly of a lot of people who have been disenfranchised for way too long. And I think all it takes is a spark, right? You know, a candle loses nothing by lighting another candle. It just takes that spark to get things going. And I don't think time would be of consequence. All of those traditional things that would matter wouldn't matter anymore, because folks are ready. And I think that's the fear, that folks are ready. And I think they're getting prepared just in case folks find the courage and are inspired by what they see happening around the world. Protests, you know.
Let's hope something comes of it, because it would really be a tragedy to have come so far and then for nothing.
Right.
It would be very, very good for somebody not to waste any more time and make themselves known.
And what about you, Grace? Have you ever given thought to picking up that mantle, that torch, and running with it?
No, I could hardly walk, let alone run.
We would carry you.
Well, the thing is that we have to analyze the pitfalls and mistakes that we made, even though we saw them in the making. The supporters, the Sanders supporters, needed to hold the party and Sanders himself accountable. And they were very reluctant to do that. You have to have a brutal assessment of things in this game. You can't just be, you know, all goodness and light. You have to know where you are succeeding, where you are failing, especially where you're failing. And you have to move quickly to patch up the holes. It is impossible to expect, I think, any candidate, especially one coming through a process as a kind of experiment. It started out as an experiment, if you will, and it took shape, and people began to invest in it. But it seems as if the organization itself did not take the time to analyze where it was succeeding, where it was not succeeding, and why, and what it could do about it. It seemed as if the attitude was, they will come to us. They'll come to their senses, and then they'll come to us. And that's not the way it works. But I thank you so much for calling in. You said so many important and powerful things. Thank you so much for contributing today.
Thank you.
All right. We'll close out with one itsy-bitsy little question because we're running tight on time. And who's up next? We don't have a caller right queued right up for the moment. So... I'll just call it quits right here and make my closing speech. Yes, there's a price to pay for all this, and that is you have to hear my closing speech. This is a very good exercise. And what it does is that it forces you, it encourages you to think differently. There's no right or wrong. As I said, at some point there will be right or wrong. But as you start your journey, or in some cases continue your journey, you want to do so with a kind of end game in mind. And you have to prepare your mind for that. You have to prepare yourself for that. And that means you're doing a lot more reading, a lot more interpretation of the reality that we are all living in. And you have to be a little bit harder on yourself. Don't give yourself too much room. In the beginning, you could give yourself a little bit of room. But you become more and more concentrated on being effective in your thinking. That makes you a very dangerous person for the political enemies that we have. You're not easy to manipulate. They can't tell you, you know, it's one thing, but it's really something else. You have an independent mind. This is very, very important. So I want to thank you so much. You make me so proud. I'm just so proud to be in your company. And I hope we can hold on to each other as long as possible and go through this journey together of expanding our minds, thinking and rethinking things, and seeing how we fit into this world or how we can fit into this world that we need to change. Thanks so much. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.